On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, foods to avoid during training and on race day, fuel versus nutrition, the fourth discipline of triathlon, boot camps, and how to reduce lower back pain. The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now. And a gigantic welcome back to the Endurance Hour podcast, episode 144. I'm your host, Dave Erickson. Thanks for listening this week. Another fun information and content-rich podcast for you today. We got some things about nutrition, about what is the fourth discipline of triathlon, the variety that boot camp has to offer for athletes, boot camps, and how to reduce lower back pain, because it doesn't have to be sports-related to have lower back pain. For example, if you're sitting in a chair all day, you stare at a screen for 8 to 10 hours at a time, odds are you have some lower back pain. So we've got some solutions from Dr. Brian Mather about that. Hey, thank you for listening to the podcast. You can submit a question, go to our Facebook page, Endurance Hour, or leave us a hashtag, I love that, hashtag on Twitter or Facebook. And what you do is type out hashtag Ask Endurance Hour. Real simple. We can do a search and find those questions, collect them, and present them on upcoming episodes when Roger and I get together. And if you're just joining us, somehow you stumbled upon this episode, the last few episodes, we've rebooted our format. We're doing these shorter bursts of informational interviews with experts in the field of triathlon, endurance, cycling, and sports medicine, and presenting that to you. And then when Roger and I get together for our interviews, they may be a little bit longer, but we'll try to be specific with some topics and themes. And so that's what we've been doing lately. And the athletes and experts you're hearing now are based on interviews that I've been doing on a weekly basis with them to provide valuable content for the endurance athlete. And so that's what this is moving forward. So let's go ahead and kick things off with Wendy Mader, coach out of Fort Collins? I think it's Fort Collins, Colorado. Foods to avoid during training and or racing. A lot of us like to train with a certain product, but that product might not be there on course during race day. So how do you adapt? Maybe you don't want to eat what they have on course, or if you do, maybe you should train with it. Here's Wendy Mader. And welcome back to Ask Coach Wendy alongside Wendy Mader in Fort Collins, Colorado. I'm Dave Erickson. And today's topic has to do with nutrition, and not just on race day, but also in training, which, of course, you want to practice what you do in training before you do it on race day. And this has to do from a question from Richard. What kind of foods or drinks should I avoid during my training workouts or on race day?
Okay, that is that's a big question, and you're going to get 1,000 different answers from anyone, any coach expert that you ask. I think the things not to avoid, first off, is anything that's going to cause GI upset. And that could vary from person to person. Someone like me, I can go eat a donut and a cup of coffee and do anything and go run. And I'm not going to have any GI upset, at least when I was younger. I think more important than what you eat is how much you eat. So really keeping and watching the proportions and the volume of food you eat. When I started Ironman, back 20 years ago, I used to eat too much. I never had GI upset, but it wasn't until I went and got my sweat rate tested that I realized and was told that I just intake too many calories for my size and my energy expenditure. So if you really want to fine tune your nutrition, getting a sweat rate test is very beneficial. I mean, there's a lot of formulas out there that you can do it on your own without going to a laboratory, but finding that balance of how many calories you need is more critical, I believe, than the actual calories you eat. I like to start athletes out generally at 200 calories, see how they do, and then you go up and, you go up in small increments, you go down in small increments. You're gonna see information out there online, and there's a ton of it. It can be really confusing, but the metabolic efficiency diet out there, I think, is very effective for certain people, and that's a very, very low calorie type of way to eat. But that metabolic efficiency nutrition plan, it's a lifestyle too. It's not just these certain foods while you train. The coach that created that nutrition plan created a whole nutrition lifestyle for the athletes that use that. And I think that's important, you know, whether you follow a vegan diet, a paleo diet, a high carbohydrate, low carbohydrate diet, that those are the types of foods you eat in training, because that's the types of foods you eat on a day-to-day basis. So it really depends on the person. It depends on the goal. Depends how much energy you expend. Depends on your size.
Now, what about the idea of eating an apple, maybe on a bike ride? Because I've heard that there are certain foods that are more easily digestible versus others, and it all depends on what activity you're going to do before you eat that product.
Right, and not only depends on what activity you're doing, it depends on how long you're doing the activity. You know, I'm a proponent of, I love to eat the apple and the fruit and the easily digestible carbohydrates that come in fruits. And it's the fructose is the name of the sugar that's very easily digestible. And you're going to see a lot of fructose and energy products, bars and gels as well, because it's easily digestible. People who are going on a very long training activity, I'm just going to say 3+ hours, should eat a little bit of fat and protein. You know, healthy fats, you know, almond butter, peanut butter, even like an avocado sandwich or something like that. So you're getting something that's going to more or less stick to you and kind of give you more sustainable energy. And usually if you're going that long, your intensity's lower, so your body can, your GI tract can handle that type of macronutrient, fat and protein, because of the lower intensity of your workout.
And I think this is probably understood, but just in case, if they have it on race day, maybe practice with whatever that food or nutrition is they're going to have available in your training.
Exactly. You know, I change my nutrition every few years based on what the race that I'm targeting is going to have on the course. I have a very solid GI tract. Like I said before, I can eat anything and go. I'm really lucky, but a lot of people can't. You know, a lot of people can't eat apples. A lot of people can't eat fruit. Some people eat the higher fat products. It just doesn't settle well with me. I prefer the higher carbohydrate product. And again, volume's important.
Okay. And you said mentioned the number 200 calories. Was that like per hour that you suggest people start with?
200 calories per hour generally fits most people. You know, if you're smaller, you know, I'm going to say if you're shorter than like 5'4", you're going to go a little less. If you're taller than, you know, 5'8", 5'9", you're going to go a little more. It's just that's something you got to practice. And, you know, if you're really concerned, it helps to talk to a local registered dietitian to help dial it in for you as well.
Check out t2coaching.com for more information from Wendy. Thanks very much. If you have a question for Wendy, use the hashtag AskCoachWendy on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. Thanks very much, Coach. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Trista Francis is a longtime USAT certified coach. She specializes in cycling, but trains a number of athletes when it comes to triathlon. She's also a very accomplished triathlete herself. And you can find more about her at itzmultisport.com. ITZ stands for in the zone, itzmultisport.com. And today we're talking about fuel versus nutrition. As athletes, there is clearly a difference on what we eat and how we eat, and how we can utilize what we put into our bodies. And there is a difference between fuel and nutrition, and that's what we talk about now. Here's Trista Francis. And welcome back to Ask Coach Trista. Alongside Trista Francis, I'm Dave Erickson. Today's topic is fuel versus nutrition for athletes and athletes on the go. And Coach, what is the difference? Because I think it's all calories to me.
Right, of course. So yeah, fuel versus nutrition. The difference between fuel and nutrition, fuel is something that we use during training and racing. Nutrition is real food. So examples of fuel are gels, sports drink, bars, protein drinks. Those sorts of things are examples of fuel. Nutrition is real food. It's apples, it's meat, it's fish, it's yogurt, it's real food. And the thing is with athletes is I think that a lot of athletes get caught up in the busyness of their lives with children or work and training, and we get a little bit lax or a little bit relaxed with how we're fueling our bodies. How many of us get up for Masters at 4:45 in the morning and throw down a you know, a bar on the way, you know, and then we come home and we're showering and we're trying to get to work. And what do? We throw another bar and, you know, head off to work. And what I have learned in the past with clients is that you're going to recover much better if you are gravitating more towards nutrition during those key parts of the day, rather than trying to allow that fuel source to leak into those areas. I had a client once that, you know, I said, "What did you have for lunch?" She says, "Peanut butter and bagel in a bar." And I was like, "No, we have to change that, you know?" So those snacks should be apples, peanut butter, cheese, pretzels, you know, don't grab for that bar. As far as lunches, you know, they need to be real meals, real food. I think a key element too is, or not necessarily an element, but a key time of day is that afternoon workout when you've been at the office maybe all day and you have an hour before you go work out and you eat that bar. And that would be a great time to once again have more real nutrition, you know, whether it's an apple and peanut butter or, you know, a small tortilla wrap or something like that. And I think you're going to notice, I know that my clients have, that you feel you recover much better. Your workouts are far more beneficial and you're able to, you know, tap out of those workouts what you need because your body is able to get those nutrients. You know, as far as recovery goes, there used to be a lot of recovery drinks and a lot of recovery bars. And I think we've kind of moved away from that a little bit. And I think that's a great time. Once again, you know, I know 30 minutes of my bike ride, I'm thinking, what am I going to eat? I'm going to, you know, that piece of chicken in the freezer, and then I'm going to, you know, chop up a whole bunch of vegetables. And we really need to, I think, emphasize that when it comes to our recovery as well.
And reminding clients and athletes alike that these bars and these fuel products are designed for that activity, whereas nutrition is designed for your everyday living, right? I mean, you're not taking, you know, gulping down some Gatorade midday because you're going to, it's not what it's for. It's not for a person who's sitting around all day. It's for someone who's active.
Right. And like I said, it takes time and it takes a little bit of planning, you know, but I think we're all invested in, you know, being active and being athletes, or we wouldn't take the time. And I think just paying a little more attention to that, the benefits are going to be huge.
And you wouldn't recommend, or would you, someone using little bits of a power bar or a bar or a gel blast or something like that for a snack throughout the day? That's probably a no-no?
Yeah, definitely. I think that's where you have the bag of pretzels, or you have, you know, there's so many different things out, carrot sticks and hummus, those sorts of things to snack on are far better.
If you've got a question for Trista, use the hashtag AskCoachTrista on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Thanks very much, Coach.
Thanks, Dave.
Up next is Greg Gallagher, and we're talking about the fourth discipline of triathlon. What might it be? Some of you are thinking, we got swimming, we got cycling, we got running. That's three. What's the fourth discipline? Is it transitions? Not necessarily, not in this context. Greg's going to talk about what the fourth discipline of triathlon is and why it's so important. Here he is. And welcome back to this episode of Ask Coach Gallagher. I'm Dave Erickson alongside Greg Gallagher here in Spokane, Washington. And today's topic is training recovery. By the way, if you have a question for Greg, use the hashtag AskCoachGallagher on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. So, Greg, you call this the fourth discipline of triathlon. Why is that?
There's the swim, the bike, and the run, and that's all great training. But the recovery part is so important. If you're not recovering, it doesn't matter how hard you're working out and how hard you're training. If you're not getting that recovery, you're losing fitness. You can't train constantly, day after day after day at that high intensity. Your body breaks down, so it needs that time to recover. So, the fourth discipline, taking the recovery days.
What type of recovery are we talking about?
So, you know, there's two kinds of recovery. You can have a recovery day during your training week. So with my athletes, I'll have them train 5 or 6 days, and on the seventh day will be a day off. So let's just say Monday's their day off. It starts their week again on Tuesday. They have their big volume on Saturday, Sunday. They take Monday off. So they're recovering from the training that they had done over the weekend and during the week. So then you'll have throughout your month, you'll have three phases of training, which will kind of ramp up, and then you'll have a recovery week. So during that week, the intensity is really low. You're still training. You're not taking the time off. You know, during your day off during the week, it could be active recovery, such as maybe a massage. A lot of times for myself, I'll use a recovery boot. So I use Recovery Edge Therapy. That's a pump system that flushes your legs out. Just rest, sleep is huge. If you're not getting enough sleep, your body's not being able to produce that growth hormone that repairs all the damages that you've done. So sleep is huge. If you can get a nap during the day, that's perfect. This sleep is so important. The bigger the volume, the more sleep that you need to get. So that's part of the gig is just get the training, but then get the recovery in.
So the key is if we can get those 8 hours of sleep, because that's when our muscles are doing the most recovery.
Right, right. Because you're not going to gain fitness if you're not getting that repaired body and your muscles are not getting repaired. And yeah, so sleep is huge. Recovery, anything to do, active long walks, you know, massage is huge. So
yeah. What about compression gear? People talk about that, whether it's during their training and then post-training.
Right. I use some compression socks. Maybe after a long workout or a race, I'll slide on my compression socks. If I'm flying to a race, I'll wear compression gear that just helps keep that blood flowing through the legs. So, like say it's on an airplane, you're sitting there for so long that blood can end up pooling down into your lower leg. Well, the compression socks help that. After a big workout, you know, I get home, get showered, and I jump into the recovery boots and I sit in there for an hour. I mean, it's huge. It's almost like having a full 24 hours worth of recovery just by having that hour worth in the boots. And again, it's a pump system, and Recovery Edge Therapy I've gotten a hold of those folks. They're great people. Their product is great. It's just a pump system, pumps from the feet up through the calves, up through the quads. It's worked. I've had some big volume days and use those boots, and the next day I'm ready to go again.
What are your thoughts on ice baths or ice massage?
You know, if I have an acute injury, ice massage is great. You know, say you got some knee issue, getting that ice in there, and you know, I've done the ice bath. I can't say I'm a fan of it. You know, you're sitting in an ice bath for 15 minutes it can be miserable. But I have had to do it. If your body needs that, definitely do it.
One of those great things for, you know, inflammation after a hard run or after you see those people jump in the lake or the after a race at the same lake they swam in.
Oh yeah, exactly. Getting that cold water helps get the inflammation out of there for sure.
And one last thing I think is, I know you know a lot about is hydration, because you need to keep those muscles, you know, the fluid around the muscles.
Oh yeah, certainly. Hydration is huge. You can't lack on that. You go out there and try to perform with dehydrated muscles. It's just not going to work out. You'll end up seizing up, causing damage. Hydration, yeah, huge.
You know, we see that in advertisements a lot, where eight ounce glasses a day for the regular athlete, regular person, but for endurance athletes, is there a range of how many fluids you should be taking in per day if you're a pretty active athlete?
No, I think starting with that 8 is a great starting point. And again, depending on the climate you're training in, is it a super hot climate? You know, are you sweating a lot? Are you keeping track of your how much you're losing? You know, a good way to do that is you get on the scale before you go for a long run. You go for your hour run, come back, and before you rehydrated, you get on the scale and you can see a percentage of weight lost, and that will be water weight. So then you kind of have an idea how much you're sweating and how much you're losing to be able to know how much to put back in.
Great tips on training recovery. If you have a question for Greg, use the hashtag Ask Coach Gallagher on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. Coach Greg, thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Professional triathlete Kelly Filnow and former college tennis player. Love the background. She's a coach of many talents, and she's out of the East Coast, and she and her sister, who happen to be a twin, Megan Filnow, put on these boot camps for some of their athletes. And some of these athletes aren't necessarily athletes, as in how you and I might think of as an endurance athlete. They're not necessarily triathletes or extreme athletes. They could be weekend warriors. So we talk about what a boot camp is, what it consists of, and how it's organized, and why it might be something you might want to consider in your off season to supplement your regular training, or as you transition into your next year of triathlon training and season. So here's Kelly Filnow.
And a big welcome back to the Ask Coach Filnow Show alongside Kelly Filnow. I'm Dave Erickson. Today's topic has to do with finding motivation. This comes from Jackie, and Jackie writes, Kelly, I'm struggling to find motivation to get out the door and work out these days. Would you recommend boot camps, or are they just like recess for adults?
Hi, Jackie. Thanks so much for the great question. I think that during the winter months when it gets a little colder and it gets dark, it's easy to have that motivation. So what I definitely recommend is doing some kind of class, like a boot camp class, and, you know, bringing a friend along too, so that friend is depending on you to get up at 6 a.m. and be there. That helps with the accountability and helps the motivation. So when the alarm goes off, you're there because she's expecting you to be there as well. And the boot camp style classes are phenomenal. You can get a great cardio burn and, you know, work on some strength training in a short period of time and get good bang for your buck. So if you're struggling to get to the gym and get that workout in, I would highly recommend some kind of class, whether or not it's a boot camp class, it's meeting a friend for a hot yoga class, Pilates at the gym, and it's a great way to meet new people too. And especially if you're extroverted, it's a great way to get that workout in while seeing people.
Talk to me about the structure of a boot camp class. What is it? How does it work out?
Typically, the coach will start you with some kind of dynamic warm-up, make sure your muscles are getting nice and loose before you start a little bit more of the intensity. And a lot of times there's high intensity intervals. And so you'll, you know, do quick bursts of speed. You'll do, you know, something like burpees, which are great cardio burns for, and also you'll probably be implementing some maybe box jumps and then suicides, which are really fun. If you're in a gym, you're going from one line to the next and sprinting back and forth. So it might be 10 yards the first sprint and then 20 yards the second sprint. And so you're going to be constantly moving the entire time. So it's a phenomenal workout, and it's also a great way to create some new muscle soreness all over your body.
So you don't have to necessarily come from a specific sports background to take part in a boot camp?
No, and the great thing about boot camp class is there's a wide variety of backgrounds. Sometimes I've been to boot camp classes where there's former college athletes, like football players, and then some stay-at-home moms who don't have any experience with an athletic background. So it's a very diverse group, and some people will have their strengths with maybe the sprints and other people maybe with the push-up series, but you know, really, you don't have to focus on what anyone else around you is doing. You just focus on what you can do. And typically the coach will give different, you know, say, for instance, you can only do push-ups on your knees, or say you have a knee issue and you can't jump on this box, then they'll have an alternate workout or just move for you to do too. So it's not intimidating.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it. It could be intimidating for some beginners, or maybe people who are in their, you know, 40s or 50s or late 30s who want to try something new. And like, wait a minute, all these athletes are out here jumping on boxes, doing line touches. Would there be different skill levels within boot camps? So maybe different groups?
There's definitely going to be a wide range of skill levels. And any good coach will, you know, if you're new, they'll ask you who's new today. And you can even talk to them before class and say you have a knee issue, just tell them that you have a knee issue and you can't do certain movements. And they will always be able to recommend different exercises. So no one's looking and watching exactly what you're doing. So it's really just, you know, all about doing the best that you can do and getting a workout for yourself and not comparing yourself to the person next to you that might have been a college, running back, but just focusing on, you know, getting better every day and getting in better shape.
Is there a way to gauge your fitness? And I ask this because I'm aware of the CrossFit style workouts where all the workouts are never the same. And eventually you kind of come back to one that you did maybe 2 months ago. Are these always a potpourri of activities at boot camps?
Yeah, but it's also good to have a starting point. So even just before you're getting into boot camp classes, maybe just doing a test set for yourself so you can kind of track your progress and see how much fitter you're getting. So maybe, you know, see how many push-ups you can do in a minute. See how many sit-ups you can do in a minute. See if you can do any pull-ups. See how many burpees you can do. Maybe time yourself on a mile. And then every 4 to 6 weeks, just do that test again, repeat it. So even if the instructor's not doing, having certain test points, I think it's super important for you to do it on your own because then you see your progress and that creates more motivation too when you see yourself getting fitter.
What's the price range of a boot camp these days?
You can have free boot camp classes, maybe at your local YMCA. You can have up to maybe $20 a class if it's a specific, maybe not at your local YMCA. So yeah, I would say anywhere from free to $10 to $20 per hour.
Okay. Great tips. And sounds like it's always something new and exciting to try.
Exactly.
If you have a question for Kelly, use the hashtag AskCoachPhilNow on Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube. Kelly, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
Check out philnowcoaching.com or kellyphilnow.com, either one. They all kind of link together. And she talks about some of the things that she does as a service. She also coaches, obviously. And if you're interested, all the people we're bringing on for the show, these regular guests are certified, they're experienced, they bring a lot of valuable content and information, a great resource, and they all offer some sort of online coaching application. So if you're interested, check out Kelly's website, philnowcoaching.com. In fact, Matt Russell is one of the coaches under her umbrella at philnowcoaching.com. I feel like I'm just promoting everybody else. I just want to give you some resources. There's no kickback or anything. I'm just, hey, we all want to get better. The more information we have, the better we all get as individuals and collectively as endurance athletes. One thing endurance athletes probably experience at one point or another is lower back pain, but you don't have to be an athlete to experience lower back pain. In fact, if you sit at a computer screen all day long, odds are you'll have lower back pain. If you stand along an assembly line, you might have some lower back pain just because you're in the same position all day long and you don't move very much. Dr. Brian Mather, the owner of the Spokane Chiropractic and Sports Injury Clinic in Spokane, talks to me now about how to reduce lower back pain.
What is the average person who walks through the door at your clinic? What are they complaining about?
I would say probably the most common complaint that we see that walks in the door would be lower back pain. However, most people don't fully understand the causes of the lower back pain. A lot of times people come in and they think they strained a muscle or they might have a disc herniation in their lower back. But more often than not, probably 75%+ of the time when a patient walks in with back pain, it's actually coming from their pelvis. So we have, as human beings, our pelvis is made up, and at the back of our pelvis, we have two joints called the sacroiliac joints, or what you'll hear me refer to as your SI joints. And if you just take your hands and reach around to the back of your waist, you'll feel two kind of bony bumps back there on each side of the spine, and those are the tops of your sacroiliac joints. And those joints actually can lock into place, and they quit moving like they're supposed to. And when those joints lock into place, it creates a ton of changes throughout your body and commonly creates the lower back pain that you're suffering from, as well as hip pain, hamstring problems, knee problems, ankle problems, IT band issues. So sometimes you don't even have to have back pain. You can have any type of pain in the lower extremity, the leg, that was not due to a trauma and it just kind of showed up. It more often than not is due to the pelvis not functioning the way that it's supposed to.
How does this fit into your specialty or some of the cases that you treat most regularly?
because we people typically come in thinking I have back pain, so let's go to the chiropractor for back pain. Given that we are able to diagnose this sacroiliac problem, and we've been very, very successful at treating the sacroiliac problem, it's probably one of the common things that people go to different doctors for, and a lot of times they're not really getting great success. They might have this pain ongoingly, or it keeps coming and going. Sometimes we'll see patients that come in and it's a brand new problem in the last week, but more often than not, it's a problem that they've had for months to sometimes even years, and they haven't found a consistent option to treat it, or they kind of have decided that, well, this must be normal and I have to live with this. And so part of the things that we look for are ways not only to diagnose it correctly, to treat it correctly, but to give patients options to have tools from home to treat it ongoingly, so that they're not dependent upon our care, having to come into the office consistently for treatment. So I give a lot of exercises and a lot of things for patients to do to try to minimize their trips into the office, so that they're able to treat this stuff for the most part on their own.
Now, SI issues, that's not necessarily a sports-related condition, is it?
It's a human-related condition. I see it across the board no matter what you do. I would say probably 80 to 90% of our patients at some point or another in their life will experience this type of an issue. It's prevalent in athletics with sports people because of all the repetitive motion in athletics, but it's also prevalent in daily life as well.
So are there certain athletes that will experience this more than other athletes?
Great question. I think our running athletes probably experience it more than anybody, which for most sports, that's you run in almost all sports. But then you take like golf, for example, where you're not running, but there's so much torque that happens while you're swinging that you see it equally in those sports. So as you asked me that question and I started thinking deeper about it, I think I see it across the board in almost all sports.
Wow. And is there a certain age range where it's more prevalent?
I see it in all ages. I see this in younger athletes as well. But I think it's most prevalent probably in the 20 to 40-year-old athlete. And I think more because in that age range, you're seeing a higher level of competition. Your body is starting to break down in age. So, you know, while we see it in high school athletes, it's certainly not as common in a high school athlete as it is maybe with a 30-year-old individual that's still playing athletics or still training, because they don't generally give themselves appropriate recovery time. They're pushing the envelope pretty hard and still thinking that they're 20 years old and they can conquer the world. So I think that's why we see it more prevalent in that age group. But I do see it from young athletes all the way to geriatric patients.
So does your physical condition or how muscular you are have anything to do with whether or not this will happen to you?
Yeah, and it's not as much as the bigger muscles you have, the less likely, but it's how effective do you have those muscles working for you. One of the biggest things that we see with sacroiliac problems is when that sacroiliac joint locks into place, you often lose control of your glutes. And so your gluteal muscles get inhibited and they don't fire at the right time. They are your primary stabilizers of your pelvis. And if they don't do their job at the right time, then the system can't function correctly. So you might have strong glutes. It's very common in like triathletes and runners where they do events that really work their glutes in running and biking and swimming, yet they overwork their glutes to the point that the glutes get fatigued and they shut down, and then those joint mechanics have to take over and compensate and they lock into place. So someone can be very muscular, very active, and their muscles just don't do their job at the right time. So we spend quite a bit of time retraining the musculoskeletal system to get those muscles to do their job at the right time to stabilize the system so that they can continue to go on without pain.
I'm sure people have a lot of questions for you. This is a great topic. If you have a question for Dr. Mather, use the hashtag AskDrMather on Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube. Thanks very much, sir.
Thank you.
My thanks again to Wendy Mader, Trista Francis, Greg Gallagher, Kelly Philnow, and Dr. Brian Mather for today's episode. foods to avoid during training, fuel versus nutrition, the fourth discipline of triathlon, which you now know as recovery, boot camps, and Dr. Mather's latest talk on how to reduce lower back pain. Coming up next week on episode 145, key components of a race plan, race day contingency plans. Again, we're going to talk about common sports-related injuries and prevention tips with Dr. Mather. That's coming up on episode 145. Thanks a lot for listening. And if you like, visit us at endurancehour.com or like us on Facebook. We'll be doing updates there and sharing articles from even other sites that we find valuable, at least could be valuable to you. So take a look at those places and follow us there. Appreciate that. Until next time, I'm Dave Erickson. Have a great week of training or racing. We'll see you next time.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere. Look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.